sensational crime. An airtight alibi.
We can't lay a finger on this guy.
And a chain of evidence.
Bring him in.
Charles Bronson is a cop looking for a killer, and he's running out of time.
Go ahead, take me in. You can't punish me.
When the guilty go free, the system is the crime.
I'm a mean, selfish son of a bitch. But I want a killer, and what I want comes first.
How come I've never heard him mention a daughter?
It seldom crosses his mind that he has one.
He's one angry man with someone to protect.
What's wrong with your father?
He can make a difference.
You like hurting girls?
I won't answer that.
Girls won't have anything to do with you, but you get back at them, don't you?
I won't listen to your filth. Hurry up!
Gotta remind you about evidence contained under duress. It's inadmissible, Leo.
We got no evidence and we can't hold this kid.
He's our man, Captain. We're gonna get him.
On some blood.
He's lying. There was no blood on my coat, and he knows it.
How do you plead, Warren?
Guilty or not guilty? He's not guilty.
The last thing I want to do is get involved with a cop.
Well, I don't blame him. Leo, I went back to the lab and I talked to the technician. And I asked him if you...
Why didn't you ask me?
It's true, Lieutenant. You planted the evidence.
You know why.
We could nail it sooner or later.
After counting how many more dead.
We had to be stopped.
Forget what's legal. Do what's right.
After all the evidence is in, he'll reach his own verdict and execute the sentence by the deadline. When there is no justice, this man is the law. 10 to midnight. Charles Bronson, Lisa Eilbacher, and Andrew Stevens in a Golong Globus production of a J. Lee Thompson film. 10 to midnight.
All right. welcome to episode 88 of Unsocial Spectators. And this week we watched 10 to Midnight from 1983.
Wow.
What'd you think?
The worst fucking movie we've watched. This is the worst fucking movie we've watched. It is really, really bad.
What about the John Snyder film?
That has more credibility because he actually was kind of passionate about what he was doing, even though it wasn't very good. This is just bad on so many levels that I can't comprehend why it got made other than it had Charles Bronson in it. Because, like, from the start, you have a scene where, okay, so the whole movie is about, I feel like more this movie was more of a response to Reagan's shooting and the killer getting off on the insane plea. But sure. Everything I had researched said it was more based on Ted Bundy and Richard Speck, but I didn't really get that vibe.
I liked it.
Well, in the opening scene, you have this guy, and I would say this is an 80s incel. This is a guy who just he can't get with women, so what does he do? He kills them. And so in the opening
scene, has a penis pump.
That was another fucking ridiculous scene. It was just so weird. So opening scene, he goes to the movies. And so he's hitting on these girls. And you see that he's using this to create an alibi while he goes to the bathroom. And then and the whole thing at the movies takes place at night. Next thing you know, it's daytime and he's out at this van. Like there's
didn't make sense.
Yeah, it didn't make sense at all. So it's daytime. And he is completely nude in the woods, which gave me kind of a, what was the killer that used to track people? The Zodiac Killer gave me a Zodiac killer vibe because he goes to where people are like making out and there's this van that's a rockin' and they're just totally nude in the van. It's very sensationalized, very exploitation. And he starts to kill the guy in the van. The girl gets out and runs naked. He tracks her down, kills her. It's all done in daylight. Then he goes back to the movie theater and it's dark. They even leave the theater and it's dark. The cops show up at the site where the killing happened and it's daylight. Like, it all pretty much was filmed in that one daytime scene. They never filmed it at night to get any continuity. Well, that's
because of the Canon film. They have to save money for Golden Globus.
Exactly. So that's what I wanted to get to is Canon Films ran from the 60s to like the early 90s before it went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And did some wild ass films at the time. I tried to look up like what were the ones I enjoyed, and like Masters of the Universe was fun. But they're fucking wild. There's a documentary I really recommend about Canon Films called Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films.
I listen to the Canon podcast. So they review all of the Canon movies and it's really fun.
Oh, okay. I found out there was a second documentary called The Go-Go Boys, The Inside Story of Canon Films, that was made around the same time as the other documentary. So it's like 2014, but it looks like it focuses more on Golden Globus and their involvement in the film. I can't find it streaming anywhere except for Sling. So if you have a Sling subscription.
Nope.
So originally this was going to be a Charles Bronson film where he was another vigilante type, but then they wrote in that he's a cop. And then by doing it as a cop, he's the worst cop. Like he commits so many crimes in here. And he also has like he's basically Judge Dredd. Like he decides who's broken the law and who hasn't, who's guilty. There's not really a lot of evidence against this guy. So he gets some blood and taints his clothes so that he's taken in. And it's like, so he's violated this guy's rights. He's done everything to be the worst criminal. And so it's like hard to even show that he has any redeeming qualities whatsoever. He's a bad father. I don't know, man. I just really fucking hated it because I was like, there's nobody to like in the movie except for Lisa Eilbacher, who I am a big fan of. I had such a crush on her as a kid. She's in the Beverly Hills Cop movies and plays his daughter in this. Right. But oh my God, I hurt from how bad it was. Like I was just so you have lack of continuity. You have a bad cop who taints evidence. He's a bad dad, but you put your trust in him that he's going to execute justice by the end of the film. Even when he goes to court to say like, "Hey, I tainted the blood." He doesn't lose his job. He doesn't lose his gunner badge.
No, he does lose his job.
Well, then why does he still carry a CB radio around to radio Andrew Stevens later?
Because he has it. In the movie, they say he did lose his job.
Oh, I must have been so bored. I missed that part. Because that's kind of near the end where he's just tracking the guy, making his life miserable. I do love that he is like the quote tech support for the office that he works at. So it's like he's fixing typewriters for the secretary pool. that's his job. And he's giving all the girls the big creeps.
Right.
The one thing I did find out was that Alec Baldwin tested for the role of the killer.
Oh, okay, good.
That would have been
perfect.
Yeah, that would have been kind of fascinating to see. But Charles Bronson, the other thing I read was like he was like a little bit older by the time this movie was coming. So he had plastic surgery to look younger in this film.
Huh.
And so this is like plastic surgery in like 82.
Yeah, but Wilford Brimley is the one who really needs plastic surgery. He was 49 in this movie.
Jesus, he
he was younger than us.
Yeah, and he looks. Wilford Brimley was born with mustache and receding hairline. I swear to God. But there's like cool bits and stuff that I researched for this. The roommates that Lisa Eilbacher has are Kelly Preston, like her first film debut, who passed away recently, and who has pretty much been doing TV and film since she was a kid. I remember her in Space Camp. That was the first time I remember seeing her, but she's like one of her roommates. And Ola Ray, do you know who Ola Ray is?
No.
She was the African-American roommate that they had that dies in the shower. She's Michael Jackson's girlfriend in Thriller.
Oh, that's right.
That's why she looks so familiar, because I was like, I know her from something. Jeffrey Lewis, who was the sidekick to Clint Eastwood in a lot of those 80s movies, is playing a real sleazy lawyer in this.
Yeah, he wasn't a very believable lawyer.
No, not at all, because he plays a better country hick sidekick, you know, than anything. Like, I remember seeing him in a lot of stunt movies and things like that, and just not used well in this. But this is the same people that gave us that other terrible movie, Kinjete.
Yeah, J. Lee Thompson made 6 Bronson movies.
Yeah. Roger Ebert gave, I believe, 3 of these Bronson films 0 stars, and this is one of them.
I mean, the director, he was a good director. He made 2 Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah, he did Conquest.
He made Cape Fear, the original.
A great one.
I mean, he's made a bunch of good films, but I think this is more at the end of his career where he's just kind of a money grab, you know?
Yeah, because he did this, and then they turned around and within a year knocked out the next movie, was The Evil That Men Do that we watched, which was a lot better.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic.
Andrew Stevens plays his Bronson's partner in this, and Andrew Stevens is Stella Stevens' son.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps going, I know I don't look like a cop. Which is such a weird thing. Like,
Because he looked like a cop.
It was so weird. Just over and over again, you know, well, he doesn't look like a cop, you know, and it's like, well, what the fuck does a cop look like? And I think everyone in the 80s was just like, if you were a cop, you were just an old man with a mustache and a gun. And that was it.
Yeah.
And he was kind of a pretty boy.
Right.
You know, in what he did. But Wilford Brimley, he always looks like a cop. The guy Gene Davis did all these nude scenes as the villain, and so he was on set nude all the time. Like, they didn't do anything to cover him up, and he just wanted everyone to be comfortable with his nudity, which is a weird vibe. But at the end of the movie, there was supposed to be a fight between him and Bronson. Bronson said, "There's no way I'm wrestling a naked dude."
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was a weird film, but I had a lot of fun. I just have so much fun with Bronson movies. He just cracks me up. The acting is suspect at times, but I mean, just fun. Just
he
fun. Just
he walks through these films like, you know, he can do better.
Oh yeah. Know?
And you know, he's a short guy. He definitely is like the Tom Cruise of that generation. Because there's a scene where he goes to the hotel where he's tracked down the killer who's picked up a prostitute. And he goes, there's a guy who's about this high who's definitely shorter than him. And it was like, that guy was so much taller than Bronson. But I feel like
he couldn't raise his hand that high.
That's exactly it. Because Bronson's a little guy. And this guy was not small. But man, other than like it bringing me back to canon films and looking through that, and my big crush on Lisa Eilbacher, who kind of retired from films. Like, she got married and then just kind of went away after doing the Beverly Hills Cops. I believe in the 90s, she kind of just disappeared from acting altogether. But she had done tons of TV and movies. She was an oil man's daughter, but she was born in Saudi Arabia. And I just think just one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And I think that's just from my 12-year-old Clay still going, wow, pretty.
Yeah, that's right.
But I looked up Canon Films to see, like, is there anything out there? And someone's hijacked canonfilms.com and started their own. They even use the Canon Films logo, but they have like a Yahoo and a Gmail address. They don't, they have some stuff on their website, but most of it's kind of fallen apart. They have a Facebook page and their last post was from like last year, but only one post. Yeah. And I was like going, man, I would love to see Canon kind of get it back together, but I don't think this person should be able to use their name, logo, and everything else they have about them.
Well, nobody owns them anymore, so.
Well, yeah, I guess if they bought them, if they were out of bankruptcy, they could have bought the rights to the name or something. The other thing I noticed was Lisa Auerbacher plays a nurse in the film. Uh-huh. And I have never seen a nurse dressed like she was, because she kind of looked like a candy striper. And so I looked up, and there's a history of like nursing uniforms.
Yeah, they used to dress like that.
Yeah, in the 40s. That's mm-hmm. That is actually a nurse's uniform from the 1940s that she's wearing in the film, that all the nurses wear. And by the time the 80s had, they still had like a nurse's uniform, but it almost looks like a janitorial type uniform.
Yeah, but the nurses, they were in a dorm room. So remember, so they may have still been studying to be a nurse. You know, if they were in a dorm, so it makes sense.
Yeah. I was just kind of fascinated with the history of nurses' uniforms, because they didn't even actually start just wearing scrubs until the 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Which is they did it earlier than that, because a friend of mine, he was totally fat. He had a fetish for scrubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Every time we would see a nurse with scrubs, he would just be, you know, like a ostrich. Oh, my God, scrubs.
What'd you think about the pot scene where he goes into the morgue and catches the dude smoking pot? Of course, he doesn't. Funny. Yeah, it doesn't hold him to it. He just kind of said, you know, illegal possession of marijuana is a crime, but I don't see anything. It's all gone now. And then just leaves. You know, I was also curious too, because Lisa Auerbacher says her character's 20 years old in the film and she's drinking with her dad. And I was like, oh, so they were the legal drinking age at the time was 18. So
yeah, I remember when they changed it in Texas, to 19. It had been 18. They changed it to 19. And then they changed it to 21. And I knew some people that were, they were like 20. And the next day they're going to change it to 21. And they would go to bars at 20 saying, well, this is the last time for 6 months, you know.
Yeah, it's so wild to go back this far. The other weird note that I saw in the film was the fact that the cops didn't wear seatbelts in the car. Seatbelt laws didn't pass till like 95.
Right.
So I was like, I forgot how long that was, that people were just like, it was such a big deal to have to wear a seatbelt in a car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But the last little bit I had was on Andrew Stevens, who has created his own production company, has produced a ton of movies. He was a producer on The Boondock Saints, The Whole Nine Yards, 3,000 Miles to Graceland. He has produced over 100 films. He's directed a ton of films. He's acted in almost 100 films. And I was going through some of my comic book stuff, and I had this old copy of the USA Swamp Thing series. He had directed like 3 episodes of this back in the day. That guy's still hustling in Hollywood, trying to make movies. And he even made a movie this year called My Daughter's Deadly Roommates.
Oh, okay.
He seems to do some sensationalized type of stuff. It's kind of fun to look through. But, yeah, the dude's still at it.
So, what else have you been watching?
Oh, God. After we did Disco Godfather, I went and watched the documentary on Rudy Ray Moore that's on Tubi about him. And it was so damn good. It was done in the 90s when he was still alive. So it was kind of neat to go through the people that he had had such an impression on. Snoop Dogg just talks about him, about how they would watch it every day at his mom's house because they had the VHS copy of Dolemite and would just watch it over and over again. And he said that if there was no Rudy Ray Moore, there would be no Snoop Dogg.
Right. You talked about this last week.
Oh, I did. Oh, I went in. Okay. My bad.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to let you know.
Okay. I couldn't remember if I'd done it before or after, but yeah, all the Rudy Ray Moore films are on Tubi, but Shelby found a box set at Half Price Books and ordered it for me. So I'm going to get a copy of all his shows, all his movies. And hopefully I'll get it before we do the film for next week.
Oh, okay. Yeah. P.D. Wheatstra.
Yeah. Which when I watched the trailer, I was like, this is really weird. let's see here. What else did I watch this week? Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, the Netflix series that is, it's a different telling of the Scott Pilgrim story. Like if you're a big fan of the Edgar Wright film, he brings all the actors back and it's an animated film done out of Japan by one of their big anime studios. And the story is very different from what the movie was. And it's really a lot more fun because you get to spend more time with the characters and you get to go deeper into them. I'm only halfway through, but like if anyone's curious, like the first episode pretty much kind of sets the tone on how different it is by what happens in that episode. I've got like four more episodes to watch. And so Shelby and I've just kind of been watching two a night every night. And Edgar Wright and Neera Park, who have been producing things together since Spaced, both are executive producers on this. I'm trying to think, like, every episode I've pretty much enjoyed. They're just a lot of fun. And the animation's done really well. It kind of borrows from the movie a little bit. My favorite episode might be, or my favorite villain or Evil X at this point is probably Lucas Lee, who's played by Chris Evans. And that episode was probably my favorite. He really kills it in that.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the last thing I've watched is we binged the last season of Queer Eye.
Oh, okay.
Just because it's a reality show that's like very good for your mental health. It just has a lot of guys who get together to help somebody who's going through shit or has something that they're trying to get past. I kind of enjoyed the therapeutic process of like what they do to help these people kind of move on through their different problems. And I know a lot of people go into the holidays. I mean, I do just with like, you know, mental health issues and the stresses of family and bullshit like that. And it was like kind of a nice, easy watch that you don't have to, that you're kind of invested in, but because it's reality, you don't have to like just focus on it.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Maybe I should check it out sometime.
Yeah, I think it's all on Netflix. Yeah, yeah. It's like a whole new set of guys from the original guys and what they did. It seems to be more helpful than just a bunch of fashion bullshit. Right. It's just kind of like people who are stuck in a rut or have something going on. I just really enjoy it. So what you been watching?
Okay, so I rewatched They Call Me Bruce.
Oh, I haven't seen that in forever.
I haven't seen it in forever either. Very, very problematic.
Yeah,
every joke in the fucking movie is racist or homophobic, or I mean, you know, I'm almost embarrassed to say that I love it so much, you know. It's like Blazing Saddles. You could not make this today. No way in hell.
Because I'm trying to remember, don't they, like, is this the one where they shoot a lot of current stuff, but they use some archival footage from old karate movies? No.
I mean, they have flashbacks, but it's him dressed up as his grandfather, you know? This movie is fucking wild how sexist, racist, and homophobic it is. It's just amazing.
Definitely. I know, man. It's weird the shit that they put out in the 80s that passed for entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, it was entertaining. I loved the hell out of the movie.
I didn't know.
Don't tell anybody.
I didn't know they made a sequel, and I looked that up to see.
Yeah, I haven't bothered watching it. I think I'll pass on it.
Why? It's got an all-star cast. You got Joey Travolta, Pat Paulson.
Presidential candidate Pat Paulson.
Yeah, exactly. But Robert Guillaume's in that.
Oh, wow.
That's got to be pre-Benson.
Yeah, no, that wasn't pre-Benson. That's post-Benson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm going to pass. I started watching Pennyworth.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, what a good show. What a fucking great show. Totally up my alley. You've got spies and you've got security services, and it's, you know, it's weird because it's set in like an alternate timeline, because the Third Reich is still around in the 60s. It's really weird, you know. What? And in England, they're having like public execution still. And they have people, you walk around the city and there are still people in the rack. It's really fucking weird, man. But I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. And it's about, like, Thomas Wayne is a CIA agent. And Pennyworth is like started this security business. And he works at a strip club. And it's just fucking wild.
Weird. Yeah, like, I know people have started it with the, you know, love of Batman and to get this backstory of Alfred that really hasn't been told, and then said it was just so off the mark of what that is. It almost sounds like they shouldn't have called it Pennyworth. It should have just been kind of a cool spy show.
Trust me. It's worth watching. I loved Gotham, and I'm starting to really like this even more.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of set in reality, but the recent episode, there's a Satanist involved and all this other shit.
What?
Totally watch it, dude. Totally watch it.
Yeah, because I know that when Discover acquired HBO, that for some reason, like in the third season of the show, they changed it to Alfred Pennyworth, the origin of Batman's butler. as the whole title. But again, it was another one of those Zasloff. He canceled it last year, so it only ran the three seasons.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, it's good. It's a really good show.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't know any of the cast, but I'll check it out. Jack.
Yeah, totally worth checking out. Then I finished Doom Patrol. Awesome.
Dude.
What a good show.
Just the best. And it bums me out that, because they said that, like, they really hadn't planned on ending it in the fourth season, that they had hoped to continue, but they knew that Discovery wasn't going to be financing any more WB products, shows like this. So I hope they bring them back. I absolutely love every character that was in it. And Brandon Fraser just is top notch as Robot Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He kicks ass. they're talking about canceling the Orville.
Yeah. Yeah, I did read an article on that. Who's the female? Adrienne Padalecki. Yeah. She says that because production takes so long on it, that they don't film enough episodes during the year for some people to even afford to live. There's like some people that were in the primary cast that were just living, you know, hand to mouth because they were committed to this show but didn't have other product stuff lined up because they didn't know how the filming was going because post-production took so long.
Right.
And that who's the main guy? Seth MacFarlane. He wants to write everything. So he's writing everything on his own, and it's taking a long time.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I watched Dracula AD 1972.
I don't know this.
Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing.
Oh, is it a Hammer film?
Yes.
Alrighty.
So good. So, in the beginning of the film, Peter Cushing, who's Van Helsing, kills Dracula. And then all of a sudden, you show up in 72, and Peter Cushing, who is a relative of Van Helsing, Dracula gets reborn by the weird hippies who are... I mean, by this guy whose last name is Alucard, which is Dracula backwards, and he revives Christopher Lee Dracula, and I mean, it's just wild, dude. It's fucking so much fun. You will love it.
Oh, okay. I might have to check it. It's
It's on Max.
Oh, it's on Max. Oh, okay, they don't have it listed. All right, cool. And yeah. It has a sequel, The Satanic Rites of Dracula.
Yeah, they have a bunch of them. I found a bunch of them after I found this one. So
Joanna Lumley's in it.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Joanna Lumley from the 70s.
Yeah, definitely a lot of fun. You've got two Star Wars villains in 1972. You know, just totally fun. Had a good time. Then I watched The Trial of the Incredible Hulk from 1989.
Oh, I'm trying to remember the trial. This one has Daredevil in it?
Yeah.
With Rex Smith.
Yeah, and also has Sulla from Indiana Jones as Fisk.
Oh, fuck. I forgot they had a Kingpin before Kingpin.
Yeah. It's totally fun, dude.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching this when it was on TV and they brought back the Hulk. I loved that show as a kid. Like, it's so hard to explain to kids nowadays, like, the comic shows and TVs we got in the 70s and 80s were just really rough and bare. Like, we didn't have a whole lot to watch. And so the Hulk was fantastic.
Yeah, there's no CGI, so, you know, you just had a big guy, you know.
And Lou Ferrigno just fucking Hulk. And every episode was pretty much like you started with a Hulk out, and you would have one more Hulk out in the episode, so you kind of were just, you had to watch it at the very start because you weren't getting reruns, and then you knew the second Hulk was coming, so you were just waiting to see Bruce Banner just, well, it was David Banner. You know why they called him David Banner?
Because Bruce was too gay.
Yeah. They thought Bruce was the gayest name, so they changed his name to David. Oh, and another fun fact from that show is because Stan Lee, you know, in the 70s, Stan Lee was in charge of all West Coast operations, which was he was out selling the license to these characters to TV and film. So that's how they were kind of making money outside of comics. And so they were hoping to do, they did the Spider-Man series, they had the Hulk show, And while they were doing the Hulk show, they had started to write this character who was going to be Bruce's cousin, who gets a blood transfusion, and she would become She-Hulk. Uh-huh. And then Stan Lee realized, well, if they write this character, then she's going to be a TV character and not a comic book character. So he had Marvel write She-Hulk as a comic book character really fast so that they had the copyright to it. And then and then it didn't happen in the TV show. So,
well, it finally happened.
God, I'm still kind of fascinated with Rex Smith, because he was a weird character back in the day. He was like a Broadway guy who got a lot of action roles,
right?
But was just mainly known for singing. He put out like a ton of albums.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to see how they kind of made a comic book character back then, you know, and it was a made-for-TV movie, but it's a lot of fun, dude. Really a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I watched Dial of Destiny.
Oh, I saw that dropped on Disney. How is it? Because I wasn't sure about revisiting after Crystal Skull.
It's great. It's right. Really good. I mean, it bombed, but the critics loved it. And maybe not the fanboys. You know?
I think
the but I don't listen to the fucking fanboys.
Oh yeah, I don't listen to the fanboys either. It's the oddness of like what is success and failure in Hollywood anymore, because everything that's like big box office, because that's where Hollywood is at this point, is making these big fucking blockbusters now all the time. And it's like, if they don't make $1 billion, they're a failure.
Right. Dude, it's a lot of fun. Harrison Ford is having fun, you know. Okay,
good. He didn't look like he was having fun in Crystal Skull.
He was having fun in this film.
Good.
Yeah, then this morning I watched Timeless Heroes, Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones, which is a documentary about Indiana Jones, basically, you know. So, I mean, the second half of the doc is basically an advertisement for Indiana Jones 5, but it was still fun, you know. It goes back to the original where Lucas was coming up with the idea in 1975, you know, while he was making Star Wars, you know, all this stuff. He sat outside of Raiders to make Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. But you know, Raiders is lifted from another movie very heavily.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, almost like the shot for shot in some of the scenes.
So was Star Wars.
Not as bad as Raiders, I feel like. I mean, Lucas and Spielberg get a lot of credit for that film, but it is like pretty much kind of a rip from another film. I forget which one it is. If it's Sierra Madre.
I don't think it's Sierra Madre. I know that film backwards and forwards.
The Treasure of the Sierra Madre versus Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I don't see it. I love both of those films. I don't see that at all.
Okay. I'll have to look at it. I'll research. And I know I've watched a video about like some of the scenes compared back and forth. Even the mountain from the Paramount opening to the original one, which just uses a real mountain. You just can't have that charisma that Harrison Ford has in that whole film. He's just fucking awesome.
Yeah, but Lucas said when they're doing the casting, they're looking for Humphrey Bogart.
Wow.
You know, but he was dead, so. I think it's probably more from the Republic serials.
Yeah.
And maybe King Solomon's Mines, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That sort of stuff, in my opinion.
Yeah, wasn't King Solomon's Mine a Golden Globus canon film that was
done? Well, yeah, that's a remake.
Yeah.
They did one in the 50s.
I just remember that one because that was like early Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
Smoking hot Sharon Stone. But Richard Chamberlain, not a guy I go, you know, he's a Indiana Jones type.
Yeah, but I mean, they wanted Tom Selleck, but they wouldn't let him out of the Magnum contract.
Yeah, I know. So. And have you ever noticed Chip and Dale wear the Magnum PI shirt and the Raiders of the Lost Ark jacket? A lot of people just realize that now. I'm trying to remember, someone on my podcast goes, I just saw that and I just got it.
Yeah, in Dial of Destiny, Mads Mikkelsen is fantastic.
Oh, well, fuck yeah. I mean, everything he's in, he makes bad movies fucking excellent.
And Phoebe Waller-Bridge is really good, too.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen her in much.
Dude, if you haven't seen, what's a show she did? I think it's on Netflix. Fleabag. Dude, that's great fucking show.
Oh, okay.
She's pretty incredible. And I think she also was a creator for, what was that show?
Killing Eve?
Huh?
I'm just looking at some of her credits on here. She was I forgot she was in Solo. She was like a robot in Solo.
Oh, yeah, she was. That's kind of where Lucas got the idea to use her in Indy. But she was kind of a producer creator for that one show with what was her name?
She has a ton of let's see here. Crashing. Let's see here. Where is it? She was a writer on Drifters. Writer on Killing Eve for 4 episodes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Executive
producer on 24. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, she's great. She's fantastic.
She got a ton of theater credits.
Yeah, she's a great actress. I totally dig her.
Oh, okay.
Then I started watching it's an animation anime on Max, Scavenger's Reign.
I'm about to start that because I've heard great things.
Dude, it's good. It's really good.
Yeah.
Pretty. I'm not going to say anything about it, but just let me know what you think because I'm enjoying the fuck out of it so far.
Well, yeah, it's on my to watch list.
Yeah, definitely check it out. So, yeah, that's what I've been watching. You got any news?
I got health news.
Oh, okay.
I have gotten steroid shots in my back, and this past week I got them in my knees, and I'm not feeling a whole lot of pain anymore. Like I've been able to do like a lot of stuff. I was surprised the knees I was kind of worried about getting shots in, because I had like surgery about a decade ago on both of them with torn meniscus and torn plica. And the doctor did such a shit job that my knees were actually worse after the surgery than they were before. And I just got a referral from my doc, went to see this guy. And I'm like, hey, they've been rotting away from the Agent Orange poisoning. I've got arthritis in them. They hurt all the time. And he goes, well, do you want a steroid shot? I'm like, well, I thought they were like my back shots that you had to have like a live x-ray to see where it went in. He's like, no, I'll just do it right here.
Well, yeah, because they're trying to miss your spinal cord.
Yeah. But still, like when you feel the shot go into your knee, like I felt my kneecap like levitate, like it moved.
Sure.
And oh, I felt so much better. Like, the only problem I've had with the back shot is I pinched a nerve in my leg that was just a shooting pain down the side. And so I've just been on muscle relaxers nonstop to try to get it to move. But the physical therapy has helped alleviate it a little bit. But, man, I might be able to start driving and doing more. Like, I might be able to get out of the house and fucking live life.
Oh, that's awesome news.
Yeah, yeah. You got any news?
Yeah, I got movie and TV news. So, they're making an Alien film set between Alien and Aliens.
I don't know, man. Aren't they done just digging and scraping the bones off that thing?
No. Apparently not.
I mean, I really hated Prometheus and kind of these last batch of sequels that came from that. Just really terrible. Who's directing this?
I don't know.
Get Ridley Scott, and then it has a chance.
He won't
come back.
Speaking of scraping the barrel, they're making an open film prequel.
Who's involved?
Don't know.
Hollywood is so fucking weird. Just so fucking weird.
And speaking of scraping the barrel, there's going to be a Thanksgiving too.
I've heard nothing good about this one.
Thanksgiving 2, second
serving or something? Serving.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
But, that's a great title, though. I mean,
but apparently it's made enough money to where they're going to go back and make it a second one.
Well, you know, that Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. You
yeah,
know,
there's a Tigger one coming.
Yeah, no one's making really true independent film. They're just making these IP knockoff bullshit things like this that are just like people are going out of curiosity, because I don't know anyone who goes, I really would love to see a horror movie with Winnie the Pooh and Piglet.
Yeah, A24 and who is it? Blumhouse, they're making new stuff, though.
Yeah. A24 is doing it. It's probably the heart of independent film right now.
No, I totally agree. I mean, they won the Oscar last year, so that's really a big deal, you know, when it comes to movies.
Yeah, I guess when you win an Oscar, that does draw more eyes to your projects.
I mean, you win the movie Oscar and three of the actor in the Oscars. You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I just remember back in the day, you had so many kind of, like, looking at the 70s and the kind of films that came out. I look at a film like Ordinary People, serious fucking drama, Timothy Hutton, Donald Sutherland and Mary Tyler Moore. Just a fucking dark family piece about a kid who commits suicide. And it's like, you know, not the most uplifting thing in the world, but it was like the best picture. And you could go watch serious dramatic films like that. I just don't feel like that we're not getting that kind of quality out in theaters anymore, because it has to be like a big iconic blockbuster thing. And the films and stuff that we're getting on streaming aren't even very high quality. I think Netflix has really just done a piss poor job of the stuff that they crank out. You know, I don't know. I've just kind of become aware of the MGM Plus has their own streaming service. And I'm kind of curious, like, some of their old products, or if they're going to do new content, because it seems like they would want to do that kind of content. But
well, MGA Plus,
billions.
MGA Plus is Amazon.
It is.
They own MGM.
Well, fuck them, because I hate Amazon. I'm never.
MGM Plus has new series. They already have new series available.
I'm gonna have to hit the pirate shores and see.
Look, Amazon bought Epics and turned the Epics into MGM Plus.
Oh, okay. All right. $6 a month. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. There's one show on there, Godfather of Harlem with Forrest Whitaker. I mean, it's worth $6 to binge it real quick. And I think they have a show right now called Beacon 23 that's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, Lena Headey.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think she's ever done a bad film. Like,
right.
She's so great in Game of Thrones, but like, if you've never seen her villain in Dread, fucking fantastic. And plus, she played Sarah Connor on the TV, Sarah Connor Chronicles, that people just missed out on. That was a great fucking show. And she's really good in it.
Yeah, I really enjoy her work. So next week, we're going to be watching. You have your YouTube clip yet?
No, because like all blaxploitation films, it has such a bad trailer that it's it's just fighting and music and an occasional reference to the title.
Yeah, so we're going to be watching Petey Wheatstraw from 1977.
Another Rudy Ray Moore film, and I think that'll be the last of him that we will see him for a while. But I'm still a super fan. I'm going to try to track down some of the albums.
Okay. Well, we'll see everybody next week on the show.
See ya.
Bye-bye.